I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor podcast. On today's podcast, we're talking about Chinese medicine. I invited today's guest on to help you understand Chinese medicine and how it fits in with other modalities and practices. We also discuss what your body, including your skin, tells you from a Chinese medicine perspective, which is quite different but very valuable information. My guest today is Brody Welsh. He is a licensed acupuncturist, board certified herbalist, Chinese medicine expert, group coach, and self-care strategist. She's the founder of Life in Balance Acupuncture in Corvallis, Oregon. In addition to her clinical practice, Brody helps caring, high-achieving women put themselves on their own to-do list so they can trade stress and burnout for energy, joy, and vibrant health. She's helped thousands of clients improve their digestion, sleep, and mood, dial in regular body-mind practice, and step into the next version of themselves. She's also creator and host of A Healthy Curiosity, the podcast that explores what it takes to be well in a busy world. Today, we cover what is Chinese medicine, how to incorporate Chinese medicine into your healthcare and daily practices, and even how to find a Chinese medicine practitioner for you. So please enjoy this interview. Brody, it's so great to have you on my podcast. Welcome.
I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, good. So today we're talking about Chinese medicine, and I think it's fascinating to talk about Chinese medicine. I think Chinese medicine is such a complementary part of when you're working with a healthcare team. And I really think people, if especially people that have a health condition or a skin issue or whatever they're struggling with, it's nice to have a healthcare team of different people that complement each other. And Chinese medicine is definitely one of those things I think complements naturopathic medicine, functional medicine, as well as even conventional medicine. It can be a nice balanced approach of complementing these different modalities.
I couldn't agree more. It's really that no one lens that you look through has a monopoly on the truth. And so the more you can see yourself through more than one perspective, that Chinese medicine's real strength is just being able to look at your way through the lens of energetics. And so it's totally compatible with anything else that you might be doing for your health.
Yeah. So let's start very fundamental basics here. What Sure. is Chinese medicine?
Chinese medicine is the one of the oldest continuously practiced systems of medicine on the planet. Ayurvedic medicine from India and Chinese medicine are kind of like arm wrestling for the title of who's been around the longest. But basically, we've got evidence that where our textbooks go back over 2,000 years and our oral tradition goes back at least 3,000 years that it's been practiced in China. And essentially, it's a system of a philosophy that human beings are ecosystems and that we're connected with the ecosystem outside of us. And that basically, in order to create health, it's all about creating balance in the body, a balance between yin and yang, a balance between hot and cold, a balance between all of the different energies of the different organ systems of the body, mind, body, and spirit, with a massive emphasis on being able to prevent health problems before they turn into bigger ones. And it has a few different branches. Probably people are familiar with acupuncture as the sexiest branch of Chinese medicine. But there's also Chinese herbal medicine, which essentially is like doing the same job as an acupuncture treatment, but something that you can do every day on yourself multiple times a day, that these recipes that have been passed down through the ages are designed to correct an overall imbalance in the body, not just aim at a particular symptom. So there's herbs. And of course, on that continuum, herbs are basically just strong food. So we can use diet to get balance or take ourselves out of balance. And lifestyle, kind of what we're doing in our daily lives, has a massive effect on how we feel and contributes either in a medicinal way or a not so medicinal way to whatever imbalances are present. Then we also have exercise. And by that, the Chinese did not mean pumping iron and running marathons. They meant cultivating the qi, cultivating the life force through practices like qigong, or which is energy exercise, energy cultivation. Probably people are familiar with tai chi, and that's sort of the martial arts version of qigong. So cultivating energy for the purposes of fighting somebody off is a little different than cultivating energy for the purposes of self-healing or for kind of expanding into the energetic realms that the sages and Taoist masters had had access to. So there's herbs, there's body work that basically you can use. There's nothing magic about a needle. The magic is in the point, like the body has an intelligence. And so an acupoint, a place where an acupuncturist will put a needle, is like a portal of consciousness. And so if you access that portal, you can do it with yourself. You're just like pressing on a point, using thumb pressure or finger pressure, massaging the channels, the meridians that we call them, where energy runs through the body like little highways all over the place. And you can use that, access that with body work. You can access it with an essential oil. You can access it by meditating on it. There's so many ways of dealing with the energy of the body. But acupuncture, kind of like if you're pressing on a keyboard and you're typing different letters, like you can spell a word, or you can press all at once, like Control Alt Delete, and that will do something very different than pressing those keys sequentially. So there is something really special about acupuncture versus sort of the other ways of accessing points that makes it particularly interesting. But in any case, all of those are branches of Chinese medicine. And some people might even include things like feng shui, or the energy of the environment having an impact on the energy of the individual, and also meditation.
Great. And those are all part of what's used. And also Chinese medicine has a different way when somebody goes to see a Chinese medicine practitioner. And I'd love for you to explain what to look for a Chinese medicine practitioner, but also the diagnostic tools, what you use to figure out what kind of practice to have. Now, I've had in naturopathic medical school, we get some Chinese medicine courses. So I know a little bit about this. So I know to ask you, because I know when we did these classes, it's very different from what is traditionally done to find out what's really going on with someone's body. So sorry, I just asked you two questions in one. You can answer them whichever order you want.
Sure. So it sounds like you'd like me to explain a little bit about how does a practitioner know what to do with somebody when they come to the office. All right. So there's a lot of similarities actually between seeing a functional medicine practitioner or a naturopathic practitioner in that we ask the 10,000 questions. So like lengthy intake form that we want to know about the health of every single system of the body, because things can be tied together in ways that you might not have any ability to predict if you're just looking at yourself from a Western perspective. So in other words, when we assess the health of different organ systems, we're interested not only in what we're experiencing in that system of the body, but also in the emotions, also in the mind, kind of like just the overall experience. The more information someone can give me about how she's experiencing herself, the better I can treat her. And so the idea is that we ask a lot of questions. We also ask the body in the form of, we look at the tongue and we take the pulse. We take the pulse, not just for the rate to get a sense of how fast the heart is beating, but there's actually three different positions at three different depths on each side of the radial artery at the wrist. So a practitioner will feel at the wrist and will listen at three different depths of pressure. And that, so on the right side, we've got the heart and small intestine, the liver, gallbladder, the kidney and bladder. And on the left side, we have the lung, large intestine, stomach and spleen, and also the pericardium and triple burner. These are sort of other organ systems that are a little less familiar, but we use the idea of what's the quality of the pulse like? Is it tight, like a guitar string? Is it wiry? Like, is it a stressed out, tense pulse? Or is it just a lazy pulse? Or is it an empty pulse? Is there not very much energy to the person? Or is it beating really fast? Or just sort of, we try to get an image from the pulse and get a sense of the relative strength and weakness of the different organ systems that we're assessing. Similarly, we're probably the only people in the world who are psyched to see your tongue. So yeah, may I see your tongue, please? People usually get a little tongue shy and start explaining what they had for breakfast. And really, it's okay. We're able to look at the color, the coating, the moisture, and the shape of the tongue. And that tells us, it's kind of like our MRI or our X-ray, or our way of figuring out what's going on with the internal organ systems. So the tongue is representative in terms of where things show up. There is like the heart is at the very tip, the kidneys are at the back, the digestive system's in the middle, liver, gallbladder are on the sides. So you can just get a quick sense of looking at your own tongue at like what areas might be challenged in various ways. And how you might tell is if the color is really different in that area, if it's pale, if it's purple, if it's bright red, if there is a coating that's very thick and you can't see the color of the tongue underneath it, or if the coating is non-existent or patchy, whether the tongue body is swollen and has little scallops like teeth marks around the edges, or whether it has a kind of a crack in the surface, all these different ways of assessing what's going on in the ecosystem in front of me. And then, of course, we look at the person's face. We look at the coloring of the face. We look at the shen, or the spirit that shines from the eyes. We look at how they're holding themselves, and we listen to the quality of the words behind the words, like that sort of the tone of voice that someone's using, whether it's infused with laughter or singing or whining or groaning, or, you know, like kind of whatever. It tells us a little bit about what's going on for that person deep down. And traditionally, smelling was another useful diagnostic tool. We don't quite use that so much in modern practice because people bathe, but it's
right.
People bathe
and they also use fragrances and different things, right? Essential oils.
Exactly, right. So that tends to be the least useful method of diagnosis. But usually, but the most important thing is to get a sense of all the different pieces and aspects of the person's lifestyle, as well as what they're experiencing in all different systems of their body. We put all the signs together and then we palpate the body. We'll check for tenderness at different points. And a lot of times that also gives us a sense of where energy is too much and where it's not enough. And then from there, we go to building a treatment plan that is a suggestion about how the body might come back into balance. And usually, again, if there's qi that's stagnating in a certain area, we want to get it to flow freely. And if there's not enough energy or qi in a particular organ system, we want to support it or supplement it. Or if there's too much in another area, we want to disperse that and vent it. So it's basically like looking at a garden and thinking, how do we get all the plants in the garden to thrive? Like, as opposed to just looking at them as individuals, we think about, does overall this garden need more sunlight, more shade? Do we need to pull some weeds? Do we need to add some better quality soil? Like, what's it going to take for this whole being to really just be its most vibrant self?
Yes, perfect. Thank you for explaining that. And then after your name, you have LACMSOM. So explain to everybody what those letters mean.
Sure. Well, the licensure for acupuncturists varies state by state in terms of what we might be titled. So I have the same education as someone who's a doctor of Oriental medicine, if they happen to be practicing in New Mexico, for example, because that's the state awarded title. But I am merely a licensed acupuncturist here in Oregon, which is a title that, like, I don't really care about being called doctor or not, but it bothers me that it sort of obscures the title acupuncturist, obscures the fact that I do herbs and qigong and lifestyle and diet counseling and all this other goodness that is wrapped up in the Oriental medicine. Very un-PC term, but that actually is Masters of Science in Oriental Medicine is what those other letters are. So an acupuncturist who has gone to school for Chinese medicine typically has about a 3,000-hour master's degree with about 1,000 clinical hours. And in some states, it's just good to know that sometimes doctors or chiropractors or physical therapists even are allowed to do needle insertion, like acupuncture, with like a weekend workshop's worth of training. So it's just, it's not necessarily the same thing as you might get from someone who's deeply studied this medicine that is 3,000 years old and has changed over time and has obviously a whole, like within Chinese medicine, there's so many subsystems and deep ways of practicing that are very different from one another. And so really just Chinese medicine alone is many lifetimes of study.
It's true. And I wanted to explain that because I know with my, in the naturopathic schools, a lot of them have dual degree programs where you can also get a master's degree in Oriental medicine, become a licensed acupuncturist. And so I have a lot of friends that were going through the schoolwork. I know how much work is involved in that program and to be able to tell, when, you know, what to look for when you have, when you're looking for a Chinese medicine practitioner. So I wanted to make sure that, that we mentioned that. So yeah. If you see somebody that's a doctor that says they do acupuncture, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've gone through the same amount of training. So it's just good to know people's background. Ask questions.
It's really good to ask questions. Exactly. And a good resource for people, if you are wanting to find a qualified practitioner of Chinese medicine, you can go to the National Certification Organization's website, which is nccaom.org. And you can do a find a practitioner by zip code. And people on that website, they're either going to be certified in acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, or Oriental medicine, which encompasses like the biomedicine piece, the herbs, and the acupuncture, all three.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right. Thank you. And so I want to talk about skin and the messages that you pick up from skin, because it is similar in a way to what I do in that we look at skin mm-hmm. as giving us information about a person's health, right? So
yeah,
my followers know, my audience knows, I talk about skin as our magic mirror that gives us great information about our health. And from a Chinese medicine perspective, how do you use skin as as gaining information about your clients, your patients?
Well, so many ways. So first off, looking just at the color of the person's face, right? That not that skin color or ethnicity aside, we're looking at is there a shine to the face? Is there a certain level of radiance, or is there kind of a dull quality? And if there is that sort of dull quality, we might need to nourish the blood. And if it's shiny but pale, we might need to nourish the qi. If it's very red, maybe the person has too much heat overall in their ecosystem. And if there's specific patches of redness, that can indicate that there's inflammation in a particular system, or that just like in allopathic medicine, the skin is an organ of detoxification as well as one of protection. And so we want to make sure that, like, for example, if someone is constantly breaking out, like around their eyes, for example, that we associate the eyes with the liver in Chinese medicine. So we could look at, like, well, what's their liver trying to push to the surface by giving them sort of that redness around the eyes? Or if someone has redness around the mouth, like a perioral dermatitis, it's like that could be, the mouth is the organ that connects with the digestive system, right? It's the opening of the digestive canal. So we think about, is there something in this person's diet that is creating inflammation? Or if the person has a lot of acne, for example, like that, where there is something that's raised and red, but also something that's kind of pustular, or like that has some substance to it, really, that is where it's not just flat against the skin, but there's a raised aspect to it. That a lot of times indicates that the person is dealing with what we call dampness. And dampness, I like to think of as like this fog in the body, or it's like residue. So even if you're eating totally beautiful food, like all organic green smoothie yumminess all the time, if you are not digesting well, you're going to be leaving a kind of like this, the body, like behind a residue that the body isn't sure what to do with. And so it's going to try to vent it to the skin, or it might store it as nasal congestion, or it might stick it somewhere as just a lipoma, or like some sort of like little useless blob that gunks up the works and gets in the way of us feeling vital and gets in the way of us optimizing our energy. So if someone is dealing with issues that are kind of raised or have any sort of full quality to them, that we could look at, is this person digesting optimally, and are they giving themselves proper nutrition? Because that's the other thing too, is your digestive system could be rock solid, but if you're giving it Cheetos, potato chips, and donuts all day long, then it very well could be that the body is trying to put this out through the skin to keep the internal organs happy.
Great. And then also heat, internal heat shows up a lot on the skin too.
It sure does. Anything red and rashy, anything itchy, you know, like a lot of times we'll look at that. Is there heat coming from somewhere in the body? And that heat could be emotional heat, like irritability or rage. We consider a form of liver heat. It could be nightmares or anxiety. Those could be more heat in the heart, heat affecting the heart. A lot of times an easy way to tell if you have heat in the heart is to stick out your tongue. And if the tip is very red, it's very likely that you've been dealing with what we call, not saying that there's anything wrong with your heart organ itself, but that the things that the heart or the consciousness is responsible for, our ability to focus, concentrate, maintain calm emotions, to get enough rest, that might be too much heat in the heart system that could be leading to inflammation overall. And liver heat, we just see so often in our culture because we live in such a toxic world where we're exposed to chemicals. We're constantly being assaulted by chemicals all the time, and our livers and our kidneys have to filter those out. And so plus we add things like alcohol or caffeine that tend to heat up our livers energetically, or even spicy food can create too much internal heat. So making sure that if we are exposed to a lot of toxins, that we're also detoxifying our body with lots of green leafy things, with, you know, but the things that involve a cooling quality dietarily. So just as we think about food as containing fats, carbs, proteins, vitamins, and minerals, it also contains heating or cooling properties. And those are really a lot of times very intuitive. Like most of us aren't craving a hot chocolate on a hot summer day, right? And most of us are also not craving you know, ice cream in the middle of winter necessarily. That there's some things that we know that irrespective of the temperature they're served at are going to have an overall heating or an overall cooling effect on the body. And so making sure that we're eating a balance of the yin and the yang, the heating and the cooling, the building and the dispersing, all of that is something that we all need to think about. And that balance is going to look different depending on who you are, what else you have going on physically, what else you have going on in your life, what stage of life you're in, all kinds of things.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thanks for sharing that. I want to clarify something that I think can be a little bit confusing with Chinese medicine. When you're talking, you were talking about the skin, you're talking about the pulse and the tongue, and you're talking about spleen, liver, stomach, kidneys, but it is different. It's not exactly like if you feel a weak kidney pulse, it doesn't necessarily mean that someone's kidneys are weak, but yeah, what comes along with it. But it can mean, so it's a little bit confusing. So can you help us have some understanding around that or what exactly that means? So people don't just go, so if I see this or I feel this, that means, I mean, really what it means is you need to go see a Chinese medicine practitioner.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious about that. But yeah, like what you're talking about is a really common area of confusion. I like to think about our internal organs as having mystical powers, right? So our liver that we know and love, this organ that sits under the rib cage on the right side of the body, that's responsible for cleaning our blood and all kinds of, you know, helping us digest fat and all that, that's our liver with a lowercase L, right? So that's your lowercase L liver. Our capital L liver is all that and more. So it does all of the same stuff pretty much, except in Chinese medicine, it's also connected with a taste, a season of the year, a color, an emotion. And all of that relates it kind of like, if I can explain a little bit about five element theory, I think that this can help put it in perspective for people. So if everything in the body is energy, that it becomes really hard to talk about it, right? It's like if it's all just qi, we need to subdivide that into various categories. So one way that we subdivide it is to talk about yin qi and yang qi. So yin is like the cooling, the restful, the moistening, the nourishing. And the yang is the active, heating, warming, protective, transforming. So we need both, obviously, in order to function. And then if you were to refract light through a prism, right? So if the qi is light, and you refract that light through a prism, it can separate out into the colors of the rainbow. And similarly, we can subdivide qi in the body as having to do with each of the different organ systems, which we throw in under the different elemental headings. So we can talk about wood, fire, earth, metal, and water as elements of nature that are also elements in the body. And so, for example, we're talking about the liver. The liver is part of the element of the wood type, or the wood phase, the wood element. And in the wood element, it relates to the season of spring, where new little shoots and leaves and trees are busting up out of the ground. So the direction of the wood element is upward and outward. And upward and outward energy is the same direction as anger, right? When we get angry, we get big. We want to stand up for ourselves. We want to be powerful. That's what anger does. In addition to upward and outward energy, it has to do with creativity, right? So there's that aspect of the liver that has to do with what do we want to create in the world? What do we want to strive towards? What are our goals? The liver connects with the eyes. So as I mentioned before, impurities that are coming out around the eyes in the form of redness. But the liver is also about the vision. What vision do we have for our lives, for ourselves? And our gallbladder is about the courage to decide, to actually make decisions and move in that direction. So if we go back to five elements, theory, that it corresponds with the season of the spring. And in the spring, when you taste fruit, it's not quite ripe yet. It's usually sour. So the taste that correlates with the liver is sour, which is why like liver tonics, like having a little hot water with lemon in the morning or having a little apple cider vinegar, stringe the liver to get it to produce bile, to get it to help detoxify the body. Those are such great ways of cleansing. So we think about a little bit of a taste of sour is good for the liver. A lot is going to stress out the liver. So you don't want too much of that. So this upward, outward energetics, the energy of new, fresh life in the spring, the taste of sour, the color green that resonates with the wood element. So pretty much anything green and leafy is going to be good for your liver. It's going to help the liver. And so we can start to see these correspondences that are not arbitrary. They're connected with an energetic understanding of the world around us, with natural cycles and with the cycles in the body. Does that help?
Yeah, that definitely helps. And then there are also meridians in the body, so that helps you with the acupuncture points and body work too, working with the different organ systems, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're wondering, like, how do we actually affect the health of the physical liver? We can, but we don't stick needles in the physical liver because that would be crazy, right? So what we do instead is that in Chinese medicine, we've identified the pathways of energy that run through our major organs and really through everywhere, like our shoulders, our backs, in places that we might have muscle tension. That basically how an acupuncturist might see that is we consider, okay, what systems are involved here and what channels are involved here. So if your liver is affected and you're wanting to help your liver, we're going to use points on the liver channel, very likely. Of course, many other points that could clear heat or nourish yin or whatever it is that's out of balance. But if we're wanting to talk to the liver directly, the liver has a pathway. So when you go into an acupuncturist's office and you can see a chart of lines all over the body, those are access points on the surface that we use that connect deeper with the internal organs. And so each point on the channel, there's 365 classical points on the channels that are named for the organs. And of course, there's extra points everywhere and tiny little microsystems, like we can use the ear, the hand, or the feet, or the scalp, or just so many, or the face for that matter. Any system can be a microsystem for the whole body because we are fractal beings, right? And we live in this universe where if it's out there, it's in here. And if it's in here, it's in here. And, you know, that we can get smaller and smaller with it. So we use that, we can look to a meridian to find points on the channel that do a particular job, that send a particular message. So if it's, you know, that, and when we're talking about, and pretty much they correlate one to one, like the heart is the heart as we know and love it. The only weird one really is the spleen, where I think they were aiming at pancreas. Because it has to do with spleen and stomach are like the captains of the digestive team. And obviously the pancreas regulating blood sugar and like secreting insulin, keeping our blood sugar regular. That's certainly a function that we would associate with the spleen system in Chinese medicine. So, but other than that, like the lungs are the lungs, the kidneys are the kidneys, the bladder is the bladder, that just these kinds of things. But there's usually a broader conception of it as well. So there's like, as I mentioned, there's a sense organ that connects with every organ. There's a particular layer of tissue that connects with every organ. So the skin, for example, has to do with the lungs, you know, and so having issues on your skin doesn't necessarily mean that you have issues with your lungs, because again, we can look at it in all these different ways about what is it telling us. But if someone has, you know, that what the lungs have in common with the skin is that it's the most vulnerable to invasion by the outside world. So just like we take in oxygen, we take it directly into our nose and it hits our lungs without any barriers in between, that our skin is also likewise exposed to the outside world. And so it and both the lungs and the skin have a process of keeping us safe from what might screw up our ecosystem from the outside. And so in that sense, there is a connection between the health of the skin and our immune system and our ability to fend off things like colds and flus that are coming at us through the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. And I always think the bottoms of the feet and reflexology are a good place to kind of get a, if somebody wanted to get a feeling for, you know, points that correlate to different areas, that could be a good place to start, because learning the whole body can be, it's a lot of points. But I mean, I always feel like the bottoms of the feet, you know, massaging certain points, it can be a safe place to start if somebody wants to start learning about this. What do you think?
I think that the feet are a really accessible way of talking to the whole body at once. At the same time, I just encourage people to do self-massage. Just check out, like, how does my neck feel? How does my shoulders feel? And if you find a really interesting spot, that can also be a way to learn. So just go look it up, you know, like, oh yeah. Well, so like, for example, we've been talking about the liver, so we'll keep talking about the liver here for a minute. The liver and gallbladder are a yin-yang pair. They're like a husband and wife team. And the main job that the liver has in Chinese medicine is the free flow of emotions and the free flow in general of energy around the body. So the number one enemy of liver qi flow is stress and doing too much and like not having enough time to process all that we're feeling and experiencing in our daily life. So a lot of times what will happen when the liver qi gets stagnant is that we feel it in its yang partner, the gallbladder's area, and the gallbladder goes right up through the shoulders and to the back of the head. So that chronic neck and shoulder tension, the chronic migraines, the chronic sort of like energy rising to the upper part of the body and getting stuck can have everything to do with stress and like this liver gallbladder relationship. So a lot of times just finding the stuff that's sore and massaging it and working it out can be a really great way of just experiencing like what channels might be involved for you. So yeah, I'm just a big fan of getting your hands on your body and getting curious.
Perfect. Yeah, our body gives us a lot of information that we can use, just like our skin gives us information. So I'd love to talk just a couple minutes about Chinese herbs. You have some tips on that? Because I know that there are some concerns about purity of Chinese herbs, quality. There's such a variety because a lot of these come from China, and their concerns about, even California, the herbs have to have special labels on them because of concerns about heavy metal toxicity. So anything you want to share about Chinese herbs and what to look for?
Well, first off, I want to dispel any unnecessary fear, because everything that you're mentioning is true of any supplement, right? Like, if we don't know where it's coming from, it's like, then it's suspect. But that said, and the thing that's particularly concerning about Chinese medicine coming from China, it's a totally integrated system. So if you go to a hospital, for example, and you have a sprained ankle, you might well get acupuncture, and then, be x-rayed and sent home with whatever, or you might be given a prescription to the herbal pharmacy and that would be filled for you. And sometimes in terms of like the pills and bottles, like the ready-made formulas that people take, that in China, it's legal for them to mix pharmaceutical ingredients with herbal ingredients. So for example, treating a common cold, you might get, something that has an over-the-counter cold medicine and Chinese herbal medicine combined in one. And we definitely don't allow that here in the United States. But that said, there's plenty of really excellent and reputable suppliers of Chinese medicine that adhere to good manufacturing practices, who do their due diligence with heavy metal testing and can provide you with that information. And so it's just one of those like that. And usually, like somebody like me, it's like the herbs I carry in my clinic, I don't want anything on my shelves that's going to hurt somebody. So yeah, and usually going to a Chinese medicine practitioner, it's their livelihood and their reputation that is very much intertwined with the quality of their herbal products. So it's not the kind of thing that I would buy at Whole Foods. It's not the kind of thing that I would just pick up and self-prescribe. Again, because your cold may be different than somebody else's cold, which is, that based on the fact that we differentiate everything. And so literally the right thing for you could be the wrong thing for someone else. And there's certainly, just like anything, just like with foods, there's going to be some things that are certainly beneficial for certain conditions and like just merely okay for others. But there could be some things that are actively not a good idea to do. And so you definitely do want to. It can be incredibly powerful medicine. And let's not forget that pharmaceuticals prescribed properly for the condition that they're intended for is tied with stroke as the number four killer in the United States, according to the CDC numbers. And so if we just look at like adverse effects from herbs versus adverse effects from drugs, it's just like, it is like a handful compared to this massive problem that we're experiencing. So I really want to empower people to recognize that Chinese herbal medicine, these recipes that have been around for thousands of years, and now we have ways of we have even more information as people are getting curious about the power of herbs to heal the body, that there's even more information out there about what these things might be good for and who it might not be a good idea for. But always, like anything, check with your practitioner. But just know that there's this whole world of potential support that can be available to you for pretty cost-effective rates, because just going to see a practitioner is going to be about twice as much as a month's worth of an herb formula, for example.
Yeah. And one of the things, one of the big root causes behind skin issues, or one of the big things that I oftentimes see in my practice, is hormone imbalances. And I think of Chinese medicine as being really helpful for a number of different hormonal imbalance issues, anywhere from fertility issues to menstrual irregularities, painful menses, PCOS, cysts on the ovary, those fibroids. Those are some of the things that I have seen in my personal practice when I've referred out to Chinese medicine practitioners to see some of the greatest results. I'm just mentioning this because I have seen how powerful it can be in that area. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for mentioning that, actually, because yes, all of those things and more, especially menopause, you know, like in perimenopause, like when things start getting wonky and you don't necessarily know if bioidentical hormones are the route that you want to take, Chinese medicine can be amazing. Plus, just remembering that there's this amazing interplay between the stress hormones and the sex hormones. And so anytime women are feeling out of balance with their cycle or with their fertility or with menopausal transition, that it's an invitation to look deeper at what's going on with adrenaline and cortisol and what's going on with insulin and what's going on, you know, just with all of our hormones in the body, thyroid, everything. And that a lot of times, like, you could go micro and try to figure out like what exactly is out of balance. And maybe if I tinker with this and I give myself a little extra of this, that I'll feel better. Or you could pan back and say, well, what do all these things have in common? And if you look through the lens of Chinese medicine, a lot of times it can be pretty simple and take really just a couple of months to really turn things around that have been a problem for a while. So yeah, incredible medicine. And then of course, things that we can often prescribe for someone to be doing on their own in terms of lifestyle or breathing or meditation or just these things that Chinese medicine practitioners are often trained in that we can help empower you to take care of yourself when things feel crazy.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I just wanted to bring that up about some of the hormone balance. I'm glad you brought that up about menopause, because women going through menopause, everyone goes through differently. And so having something that's very customized as a treatment plan, I think is very helpful for us. So of course, Chinese medicine is very customized to the person. And that's great. Another thing that I found to be really helpful when it comes to Chinese medicine is pain management. I know that if I get a headache, the fastest thing to relieve a headache for me is acupuncture. It is fantastic at helping with pain management. And then also some of the Chinese herbs that go along with it have been definitely help a lot of people in pain. And, you know, we certainly want to avoid the prescription pain medications as much as possible because of the addiction issues, the side effects, all those. So anytime we can think of things that can complement or help us with managing pain, certainly something I definitely want to bring up to people's awareness.
Oh yeah, that is the bread and butter of my practice, is people in pain, you know, where they don't necessarily want to take painkillers or, you know, of any kinds for the rest of their life. And maybe they don't want to have surgery. So what's left? You know, it's like what's left is how we use our bodies. And so being able to use them, making sure that we're getting a balance of yin and yang activity. So if we're doing all sorts of like, hard strength training, that we're balancing that with softening practices like stretching and opening, things like yoga and qigong. But that also, acupuncture is phenomenal at basically anything that ends in itis, you know, like anything that is painful, anything that is inflamed, it works on so many levels. So just a few of those ways, it can help the body. It releases the body's own neurotransmitters and feel good chemicals. So our endocannabinoid system, or kind of our natural chemicals that are like our endogenous morphine and like endogenous marijuana, like that can help us feel like we're in less pain and like we're more mellow. But at the same time, it can also be very energizing. So just acupuncture, it can like just put the nervous system in the state of rest and repair that it needs to be in to heal. It can also affect, our perception of pain by influencing adenosine levels. And so it just actually changes how we perceive pain. It's profoundly anti-inflammatory. It can even speed the healing of injuries and even old chronic stuff, because we're getting the body's attention and we're saying, hey, you weren't quite done with this. Put the energy here, put it in the lower back. Let's get this healed. Let's get this once and for all better. And of course, if something's been going on for decades, it may take a while. You know, you could say like, give it, you know, if something's been going on for 10 years, maybe give it a year of treating every other week, or, you know, that something like that, but you could be totally done with that pain for the rest of your life. Like there's nothing that is too far gone necessarily to be benefited. Like I've treated people in their 80s with spinal stenosis, for example, and they're able to stop walking with a cane and to feel the bottoms of their feet again. And it's the kind of thing where, like, if you were to look at that x-ray, you would say there's no hope for you. And so just want to really open that door that, like, yeah, there are definitely conditions like we're not really good at reattaching tendons that have been severed and things like that. For that, you know, like, yeah, you're going to need surgery. But if it makes sense, you know, like if it's the kind of thing where like there is all this other benefit for the whole rest of your body, body. So go in and get acupuncture and an opportunity to look in the mirror and get a sense of what's out of balance in your body, then why not do that on a regular basis as opposed to doing something invasive and risky?
Right. And again, this brings us back to full circle from the beginning of this as being part of one of the tools that people can have to help get their bodies back in balance and to look at things like Chinese medicine before resorting to surgery. And the earlier you look at this approach, the better, because the longer you wait, it's harder to implement these things and get the full benefit of it. So Brody, thank you so much for your information today. Tell everybody how they can find out more about you.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Dr. Cates. This has been really fun. And yeah, I would love to stay in touch with anybody who is interested in learning more about Chinese medicine. I have a course on the basics of Chinese medicine that runs a couple times a year. And if people want help in sort of using the habits of the yogis and sages in their daily life, I have group coaching programs. I have an online Qigong class and a podcast called A Healthy Curiosity. So those are always all things that you can check out at my website, which is brodywelch.com. That's Brody with an IE and Welch with a CH.
All right. Perfect. All right. And we'll have up links for your website and your podcast. We'll have those up on my website under your podcast interview so everybody can easily access them. Thank you so much for the interview today. I really appreciate your information.
Thanks again.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Brody. To learn more about her and the information that she shared with you and the links that she mentioned, just go to thespadoctor.com, go to the podcast page with her interview, and you'll find all the information and links there. And while you're there, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. And if you haven't done so already, I highly recommend you go to theskinquiz.com to find out what information you're skin is trying to give you about your health and what you can do about it. It's free online quiz. Just go to theskinquiz.com. And I invite you to join me on social media, on Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and join the conversation with us. And I'll see you next time on the Spa Doctor podcast.